10. The stolen Yu Zhanvang ship careened through space at full power, following the barely perceptible signal emitted by the escape pod. Zek sat at the helm. Tahiri wore the navigation hood, directing him according to information flowing to her from the navibrain. The small hands gripping the control were white-knuckled, but her voice remained steady and sure. Jaina and Lobaka huddled together away from the others.
"You and Tahiri did great, but I've got another puzzle for you," Jaina said. "Danny Kui found a way to override the Yamask communications.
That's the only explanation for the Yu Zhanvang confusion over Coruscant. Any idea how she did it?" The Wookiee went into a lengthy explanation, most of which went over Jaina's head with a meter to spare. She put up a hand to halt the bewildering flow of information.
"How do you know all this?"
Lobaka hesitated, then woofed a response. He had been recruited to work on the research team supervised by Danny Kui and Silgal. That made sense to Jaina. The Force-sensitive scientist and the Mon Calamari healer had been spearheading one of the many attempts to understand Yu Zhanvang technology. Before coming to the Jedi Academy, Lobaka had had two passions, computer science and the study of Kashyyyk's complex plant life. It had been the latter that prompted him to go alone into the dangerous lower levels of his homeworld's forests during his rite of passage to young adulthood, and to pit himself against the deadly siren plant. The combination of computer skills and biological knowledge, not to mention his desire to take on the impossible, made him well suited to this study. Lobaka let loose a few sharp woofs.
"They had you taking apart captured ships? No wonder you knew how to mess with the world ship," Jaina murmured, remembering a prank he had played with a small neural center. "So you know how Danny Kui scrambled the Yamask."
The Wookiee shook his head and gave a mournful moan. He hadn't been there for Danny's breakthrough.
"Given your background, could you duplicate the results?"
Lobaka considered, then woofed an affirmative.
"But can you go one step farther?"
The Wookiee listened with growing fascination as Jaina described her plan. His furry shoulders shook with laughter as he made his way toward the Dovin Basil. Jaina watched, puzzled. Lobaka returned in moments, coming at a lope and carrying a familiar-looking object in his paws. He handed a small globe to Jaina with a string of grumbled instructions. A slow, sly grin crept over her face as she understood what he'd found. She reached up and ruffled the fur on his head affectionately, and then went back to work.
"Is that what I think it is?" Ganner demanded, eyeing the villip with disgust.
She grinned at the older Jedi and turned to Zek.
"Let me have your seat."
He yielded the pilot's chair, and Jaina settled down, pulled on the hood, and began to stroke the oddly shaped globe.
"Are you sure that's a good idea?" Zek ventured. "Can you talk and fly at the same time?"
Her only response was a derisive sniff.
"We don't know who will answer," he persisted.
"True, but chances are that'll be something worth knowing. The more we can learn about this ship, the better our chances for survival."
The outer layer of the villip peeled back, and the tissue within began to reshape itself into the likeness of the Yu Zhanvang who had been attuned to this villip. In moments, Jaina held in her hands a horrific face, one marked by fringed lips and a tangle of scars. She knew that face. Everyone in the galaxy with access to the holonet knew it. This was the War Master Savong La. Not long ago, he'd sent a communication through the galaxy, calling for the destruction of the Jedi and demanding Jacen Solo. Jaina had seen that holovid replayed many times, but her blood boiled anew with each viewing.
"The sacrifice has been completed," the War Master demanded.
Jaina held the villip closer to her face and sent her brother's enemy a knife-edged smile.
"Not yet."
The villip crinkled into an ominous frown.
"You were to contact me when your duty was complete, Nomanor, and not before.
Pray you are not contacting me to report another failure.
She glanced at her friends, her brown eyes sparkling with something resembling her old spirit.
Oh, this is too good, she marveled.
This is Nomanor's ship. The Villip must not be attuned to him, though, or you'd think Savonlah would notice the difference.
Ganner threw up both hands. I don't know, Jaina. You've definitely looked better.
And used to look like a Holovid hero.
Where's the justice in that? She shot back good-naturedly.
Anyway, Lobaka thinks this Villip is a way for a ship's pilot, whoever that might be, to report to a fleet admiral. When you think about it, that makes sense. I don't have a complete handle on how Villips work, but from what I hear, they seem to allow one specific person to talk to one other specific person. But what happens if that Villip connection is broken? They've got to have some way of communicating with a ship, not just a person.
Lobaka found this thing on board, living in a hydroponic vat.
Maybe the ship itself attunes the Villip, and the pilot's connection with the ship allows communication.
Who is this? The War Master demanded.
Jaina turned her attention back to the globe.
Let's put it this way. I'm contacting you to report another failure, she said, turning his earlier words back upon him.
Savong La's cruel eyes narrowed. This is not Nomanor. You are not even Yuuzhan Vong. The Villip is translating.
His face twisted with fury as the logical answer presented itself.
The Jedi.
Got it in one, she mocked.
For a long moment, the image of Savong La merely glared at her. Then his frayed lips twisted in a sneer.
And this, I suppose, is where you offer yourself in your brother's place.
Why bother? I know you won't let Jason go.
That is true enough. But are you so sure of your motivation?
He taunted her.
You are the lesser twin, the one who would fall in sacrifice. Perhaps it suits your purposes to keep your brother's sword far from your throat.
Jaina began to understand what this sacrifice entailed.
We would fight each other?
Of course. That is how it is done.
An image flashed into Jaina's mind from the time she and Jason had been held captive at the Shadow Academy, forced into Darkseid training. They'd been made to fight with lightsabers long before they were ready for such weapons, and to fight for their lives against a foe cloaked in a hologram. They'd pitted her against Darth Vader, a symbol of her past and a portent of her future. Jason, however, faced the same apparent foe. Neither of them had realized until the hologram cloaking devices were shut off how near they'd come to killing each other. Despite all she'd been through before and since, the horror of that moment still visited Jaina in dreams. Her mind raced as she tried to improvise a plan. It occurred to her that it might be best to play into the War Master's perceptions.
That's how it's always done, she agreed, letting the memory of the Shadow Academy imbue her words with dread.
Jason and I are twins. This is our destiny.
You understand this much, yet you run from destiny.
She inclined her head in a bow. A look of surprise flickered over the Villip-reflected face, indicating that her gesture of respect had somehow been translated.
You are right, War Master. Numenor's ship is disabled. I can run no farther.
What is your position? He demanded. Obviously, you are wearing the pilot's hood. Ask the ship.
A moment, please.
She put the Villip down carefully, then looked at Ganner and mouthed the words, Get Lobaka. The big Jedi nodded and sprinted off in search of the Wookiee. A few moments later, a big, hairy fist thrust out into the central corridor and gave her a thumbs up.
Here goes, Jaina muttered, and turned back to the Villip.
I can't get an answer from the ship, she said, her tone defensive and edged with a bit of a whine. Is there some way the ship could be traced through the Yamask that controls it?
Numanor is an independent agent. His ship answers to no Yamask.
but sometimes a Yamask can pick up a stranded ship. The Dovan Basils are strongly inclined to link.
This Dovan Basil is ailing, Jaina said eagerly. Linking might keep it alive long enough for me to...
She let her words trail off. A sneer crossed Savong La's reflected face as he read the meaning Jaina intended to portray. Obviously, he thought she was stalling for time, gaining needed repairs in hope of fleeing capture.
I have sent agents to oversee the sacrifice. No doubt they are in close pursuit. You will be meeting them shortly.
Before Jaina could respond, the villip shifted back to its formless state.
What now? Ganner demanded.
Jaina's smile was thin and feral.
They'll come to us.
The War Master set aside the offending villip and bellowed an order. A subordinate came in a near run, bearing a second, larger villip. Savong La stroked the globe. No response.
Your other hand, War Master, the aide suggested.
He quickly did so, ignoring this latest reminder of how tenuous his new implant was. A villip, duly attuned, did not recognize the touch of his transplanted limb. The globe shifted to reveal a face similar to his own in shape and expression. The reflected warrior was younger, his flesh taut and clear, but not less scarred. Elaborate black tattoos covered an angular gray face. A small horn protruded from a high, broad forehead.
War Master, Kalila proclaimed, inclining his head in respect. I have found the female, the War Master said, without preamble. She has offered to surrender. A ploy, of course, a pitiful attempt to buy time to escape. You will persuade the Yamask aboard the priest's ship to link with the frigate and accept this additional ship in its communication family.
Of course, War Master. Inform Harar that he may contact the Jedi directly through the Kastar's ship's villip. An expression of surprise crossed the young warrior's face.
He possesses a commander's villip? He holds it in trust, Savong La corrected. When the Jedi sacrifice is completed, he will pass it to you, along with the rank and honors that attend it. See to it that this day comes soon.
His son inclined his head in a deep bow. I am honored, War Master, but I would do so regardless of reward. My personal advancement is a pale thing compared to the service due our gods. The War Master received this pious speech in silence. Go and do. Again the young warrior bowed, and the villip quickly inverted. Savong La's lip curled as he regarded the villip.
Harar seems to be failing, he said softly, in more ways than one.
Jaina flew steadily toward Tenil Ka, following the directions Tahiri gave. She did not notice when the villip began to change. Zek's soft, grim oath drew her attention back to the living communication sphere. It depicted a thin, almost aesthetic-looking visage, not quite as garishly scarred as the War Master's. An elaborately wound cloth swathed his head.
Harar, a priest of Yun-Harla, the trickster goddess, the image said curtly. It will be my honor to preside over your sacrifice.
The honor is mine, Jaina said dryly. She went on, and thanks for the suggestion. I've been wondering what to call this rock. Trickster sounds just about right.
That is not suitable. It is not possible. There is more to naming a ship than you could possibly know.
It requires a special affinity, a deep attunement, Jaina said. Is that one of the things I couldn't possibly know?
Raw fury flooded the Yuuzhan Vong's face.
Whatever paltry tricks you may have in mind will serve no purpose. The attunement has been transferred. My ability to speak to you indicates that my ship's Yamask is making contact with your Dovenbasil. Any minor control you have over the Kastar, the Trickster, Gina corrected, will be superseded. He finished, ignoring the interruption.
Tahiri let out a small gasp. To her credit, she did not remove the navigation hood.
You are establishing contact?
Gina repeated in feigned alarm.
It is done.
Gina turned the villip upside down, causing it to invert and break contact with the priest. She turned to her friends with a triumphant smile. The wave of shock and condemnation hit her like a physical blow.
Before you say anything, let me explain. Lobaka has been playing with the ship's sensors. We're receiving their signal, but blocking ours.
You can't be sure of that, Zek protested.
I'm sure, Tahiri broke in. The Yuuzhan'vong ships manipulate gravity. That's how they move, shield, even navigate. I'm hooked up to this thing. I should know.
Go on, Ganna urged.
The sensors gather information from shifts in gravity fields. Every ship has a pattern, sort of like a signature.
That's right, Jaina broke in.
Lobaka used some parts from the Hornet to rig up a mechanical disruption. The Dovenbasil doesn't know that the signals it's sending the Yamask are scrambled.
It sounds feasible, Ganner said, doubt still suffusing his voice. But if you're wrong, the Yuuzhan'vong might follow us to Hapes. We'd be endangering a world, a system, that is in no shape to defend itself.
They know we're heading there,
Jaina pointed out, which makes a Yuuzhan'vong attack on Hapes all but a foregone conclusion.
They'll have to make a stand eventually.
They?
Ganner asked, eyeing her with speculation. Not we?
I've got someplace else to be. The rest of you are welcome to come or stay, as you choose.
You're going after Jason, he stated.
She shrugged.
Was there ever any doubt?
What's your goal, Jaina? Zek said softly. Obviously it's not survival. You don't really expect to rescue Jason. Not even you could be that.
Optimistic,
he said, improvising in response to the lowering storm in her eyes.
The way I see it, that leaves vengeance.
Which leads to the dark side, she said impatiently. Spare me. I've heard all the arguments, repeatedly. The way I see it, Jedi have a responsibility to act. Act! We don't have the luxury of philosophical debates. It was the schism between Jason and Anakin, their endless dithering over what a Jedi should be, that brought them both down.
That's unfair, Tahiri whispered.
It's cruel, is it? Let's look at the facts. Anakin is dead. Jason was captured. If the surviving Jedi continue to dither, we will be destroyed and the Yuuzhan'vong will have won.
They stood in silence for a long moment as they considered her grim logic. Alima was the first to speak.
We Twi'lek have a saying. If you refuse to decide, the decision is made without you.
Get the job done, Ganner agreed.
Time to hunt,
the Barabel shouted from his position at the stern.
You'll need a healer, Tekle said with a sigh of resignation.
Jaina turned to Zek, a question in her eyes.
I'll be remaining on Hapes, or going where I am most needed, he said softly, a world of regret in his eyes.
Who could need him more than Jason?
Jaina tamped down the surge of anger and accepted his decision with a curt nod. But she made no attempt to shield her emotions from him. For a moment she felt Zek waver, felt the strength of her vision override his deeply held beliefs.
Temptation welled, fierce and strong. She would free Jason somehow, but it would be easier with the other young Jedi at her side. If she could sway Zek, she could bring them all to her side, under her control. It was a logical end to the path her thoughts had taken, yet Jaina quickly shied away from it. Swiftly, subtly, she pulled away from Zek, hoping that he would not notice that she, not he, had caused him to question his hard-won values. The puzzlement that flickered through his Force sense suggested that she'd succeeded, that he hadn't realized what she had nearly done. She pulled off the pilot's hood and tossed it to Zek. "I need some time alone," she said abruptly, as she spun away from the other Jedi. Her path took her toward the small chamber where they'd left Anakin's body. None of them followed her, but she felt their relief that she was taking steps to finally deal with her grief. And perhaps it was time. After the first terrible surge of loss, Jaina had simply stored away her emotions. It was not so different, really, from the years she'd spent protecting herself from the constant bombardment of other people's emotions. She hesitated at the threshold, staring at the quiet stranger laying on the Yuuzhan Vong bunk. He looked to be at rest, and his still form bore little resemblance to the image burned upon Jaina's mind. The grime of battle had been cleaned away, the terrible wounds bandaged, and then covered with clean clothing, linen and leather scavenged from somewhere. The features were Anakin's, the height, the form. But his ice-blue eyes had been closed, and the unruly brown hair neatly brushed. Jaina came closer, and without thinking, she reached out and tousled it with the big sisterly gesture she'd so often employed. A soft step behind her announced Tekli's presence.
"Better," the Chadrafan agreed. "This is how it always seemed to look."
Jaina turned to the little healer, her eyes dry and her heart cold.
"Thank you for what you've done here. I didn't want our mother to see him as he was."
She turned and walked calmly away, acutely aware of the grief emanating from the Chadrafan. She accepted this with gratitude. It seemed right that someone should be able to grieve for Anakin. Despite the wall she had built around her heart, Jaina sensed that Tekli was not grieving only for Anakin, but for her as well. Harar set aside the villip and glanced up at the young warrior, who was pacing the room like a thwarted thunderbolt, seeking room to strike.
"The Jedi has broken contact," Harar said.
Kalila touched two fingers to his forehead. "I have given my blood oath to bring her in, but I swear before you and all the gods that she will spend her last days in pain and die without honor." The priest dismissed this vow with an impatient wave of one hand.
"Did you mark her words? It seemed to me she implied that in naming the ship Trickster, she might in fact be employing the practice of naming ships for their pilots."
"Do you think her capable of such subtlety?" Kalila scoffed.
"She is a twin. Surely that means something, even where infidels are concerned, or the gods would not be so eager for this sacrifice."
"She is both Jedi and twin," the warrior agreed. "But take care, Eminence, not to subscribe to the heresy that attributes too much power to these Jedi. This female is not even a pale shadow of Yun Harla."
"Of course not," the priest agreed.
Still, a strange doubt lingered.
"Attend me," he said, and strode off to consult with his Yamis keeper.
They made their way to the chamber that housed the monstrous battle leader.
"You have made contact with the Kastar," he demanded.
The keeper bowed. "We have, Eminence."
"I would confirm this." "Of course,"
The keeper moved aside, allowing Horror to place one hand on the writhing, many-tentacled thing. After a moment, Horror lifted his gaze to the keeper's face.
"The link is confirmed. Have you not found it peculiar that the Kistar has sent no return communication whatsoever?"
"It is ailing,"
the keeper ventured.
"It is silent,"
Harar snapped. He turned to Kalila, and then waited for the warrior to grasp the significance of this. Horror crept over the scarred face.
"It's not possible,"
he said, his voice dulled by shock. Despite his lesser stature and the demands of protocol, he elbowed the priest out of the way and placed his own hand against the neural sensors.
"This is impossible,"
he repeated, despite the truth the Yamask revealed. "Somehow, Jaina Solo has blocked the Yamask. Information is flowing to her, but not back to the priest ship." Harar drew him aside.
"You advised me against equating this human with our great and devious Yunarla, and rightly so. But perhaps you should consider the possibility that she is somewhat more than you thought possible."
Kalila stood for a moment, his bearing proud, his scarred face conflicted. Then he inclined his head in a chopping nod. "Perhaps," he agreed.